Before we continue on with this week's episode, I just want to go over my 9-week online coaching program. This is a great option if you have never done coaching before, you have seen my podcast, you have watched the videos, and you would like more information from me. If you are not able to do private coaching with me, which is one-on-one with me, for whatever the reasons are, and perhaps you still are not comfortable with even booking an individual session, the online course is a great stepping stone for you. You will get all of the information that I give all of my private clients. You will have a weekly video that is sent to you that is custom and tailored to the specific topic that we are going over that week. You will also receive within that week a PDF, which is going to be your mini book that you will read that will reinforce everything that we went over in that week's video. You will also have homework assignments that you are focusing on from week to week to get you to where you want to be. The goal of the online course is to basically teach you what is going on inside of you that is causing you to feel stuck, that is causing you to not have the relationships that you want in your life, and to not be able to achieve the goals that you want for yourself. Like I always say, if you are interested in self-development but have never done anything like this before, you have watched my videos, you have listened to the podcast, this is the product for you. This is the service that's going to basically get you to where you want to be. And like I said, you have the convenience of doing it at your own pace within your own home. If you are interested in any of my products, I always link them within all of my podcast episodes. But if you would like to also find me on social media, I am at Stephanie Lynn Coaching on Instagram. And you can also check out my website, StephanieLynnLifeCoaching.com. Hey guys, welcome back to Heal, Survive, and Thrive. I am so excited that you are here. Let's dive right into this week's topic.
So Ross, thank you so much for doing this. It's actually an honor and I'm glad you're my first person to kind of come on this channel. So you can just give them like a brief intro on who you are and what you do. That would be great.
Well, first of all, I want to thank you very much for considering to have me to be your first person. I am honored and very, very pleased. And I look forward very much to our discussion. A little bit of an introduction is, well, I've been a psychotherapist for 32 years. I have a specialty in many areas, including trauma, narcissism, codependency, or what I call self-love deficit disorder, addictions, and a couple more things. I also own the company Self-Love Recovery Institute. I wrote the book, The Human Magnet Syndrome.
We're all aware of that book. If you guys are watching and have dove into codependency, go ahead, Ross.
Thanks. It's funny because I just found out from my publisher that we've sold 120,000 copies and now are published in nine languages. And all I wanted to do was, you know, explain something to people to help them solve their problems. And who would have ever guessed? But yes, I wrote that book. And, you know, and I'm a bunch of other things that you can find out more, you know, at my selfloverecovery.com website. And we'll talk more about that later. But thank you so much for having me.
I really wanted to have a chat with you about this self-love piece, and I wanted to get your take on it. What do you think is one thing that is missing from being a person that's whole and complete and healthy? What does that look like for you?
That's a great question. You know, as a psychotherapist and who has spent, you know, most of his career in the mental health field, I tend to see things expansively. I look at things there are always more answers than people think. So the most important element of healthy mental health is you have to love yourself. You have to respect yourself and you have to care for yourself. If you do not have self-love, then everything from that point on is impacted or tainted.
You know, I remember when I started this channel and I started self-development, even just in my own personal life. And when I was learning about codependency, when I was learning about childhood, you know, why am I this way? You know, the narcissism stuff trickled in after I learned about the codependency, learning about programming, learning about, you know, our subconscious mind, our conscious mind, childhood development, all of those things, which equaled, I guess I'm not a healthy adult, right? Because I didn't have the skills, the tools that I needed growing up to learn what that actually looked like. I mean, we don't really learn that so much growing up. Even if we had a a great upbringing and lovely family and friends and parents, even if they gave us majority of what we needed, I always felt like there was a period in the development of a child going into that adult, you know, teenage years, adult years, where you need to learn, how do I transfer what I received and then turn it into me doing it for myself? Right. You know, because you can hear praise and you can get the validation from mom and dad all day long. And yes, to a certain extent, that will absolutely help you become a mentally and emotionally healthy adult. But there's an aspect of how do I turn that around and face it to me? And on this channel, we call it parenting ourselves. So what do you think in terms of, you know, self-love and loving yourself and all these aspects, the confidence, self-esteem, validating yourself, soothing yourself, that's so hard for people to learn how to do?
Well, self-love, or what I call self-love abundance, is not difficult if you were raised by loving parents who respected you unconditionally, who cared for you unconditionally. Our childhood attachment phase in our life is crucially important in developing what will be our adult personality traits. And if we receive, unconditional love, respect, and caring from our parents at an early age, we come out of childhood with this belief that we're okay, we're good, independent of our mistakes. And that becomes what I call a normal adult. That doesn't mean a perfect adult. That doesn't mean someone who doesn't make mistakes. So when you have the foundation for self-love, then learning, being healthier, growing, evolving becomes possible. When you were raised in families such as mine or many of my clients who identify with the term self-love deficient or codependent, they can't get to that point. They can't find what is good about them. They can't insist on people treating them with love and respect because they don't have the foundation, because down deep, their conception, their belief system about themselves is that they're fundamentally flawed. And if they don't somehow make another person feel better, then they can't justify their need for being healthy and happy. So to your point, as adults, we have to make a decision, and healthy adults and adults who are struggling with mental health, we have to make a decision on us, on our mental health. But when we are self-love deficient or codependent, it is so difficult to overcome what I call the invisible forces that are tugging us down and tying us to our self-love deficit disorder.
I always found it intriguing how many layers to this there is. You know, it's not black and white. Like you said, like there could be someone that got a lot of what they needed and still struggle. And then there are some that didn't get anything at all and of course have struggled, but we're able to get to a place of, like you said, that decision, that taking responsibility, awakening, awareness, whatever it is that you want to call it, that allows them to just start the process of, you know, not only backtracking and learning, okay, this is why I am the way I am. This is what happened growing up. Okay, all of this is starting to make sense. And now what do I do about it? But start to kind of heal. Right? Like start to really learn this stuff. And I always tell my viewers and my clients that these are skills. This is something that you have to learn and practice every single day in these small moments, because it is the voice from, you know, how you were raised, programming, things that were repetitive time and time again, the invalidation, all of those things that of course equaled that codependency. And some people, it's the struggle of just, what do I think? You know, how do I actually feel? And is that right? And is this not okay? And just honoring that, again, it's layers. Some people really start there. Some people start with not even being aware that they are codependent or that they lack this ability to really take care of themselves on an emotional level, on a mental level. And then there are the people that get it. And it's just a matter of reiterating this skill over and over and just honing this practice.
You know, it's interesting that you're talking about skills. And let me first reflect upon myself. As I talk about, even write about in my book, I've been married and divorced multiple times. Mm-hmm. And I was in therapy multiple times before and after, but yet afterwards, after a terrible marriage and then divorce with a narcissist, somehow I found myself back in the arms of another narcissist. And what I came to understand after creating my human magnet syndrome and codependency cure material is that skill development, typical psychotherapy, cognitive behavioral treatment techniques do not work when there you have a trauma-based disorder, which the roots are unconscious or disassociated. And, right. And I say that because most, and I would say around 95% of all the clients that I see now have been in therapy for great lengths, multiple times, and never had any of that therapy impacted their codependency or SLDD. And it's not that the people were not, the therapists did not know what they were doing, is they didn't understand the problem of what I call self-love deficit disorder and its origins. Skill development is crucial in what I do also. But if you teach someone about self-esteem, you teach someone about boundaries, but the unconscious forces that pull them to narcissists and the fear and the loneliness and shame that binds them to these relationships that are often narcissistically abusive, the skill development does not stick. And if it does, it's never enough to offset their attraction and the magnetic pull to keep in these relationships. So yes, what you are doing is absolutely crucial, mm-hmm. as what I am doing, because they're different and similar, but without the connection to what caused it and somehow the resolution of it, the skill development doesn't always stick and make that big of a difference that people really need, at least from my point of view.
Yeah, no, I would 100% agree with that. I think what the question that I'm always asking then is what really makes the difference between someone learning these things. I always try to break it down into the most simplest terms or simplest ways, because if you teach someone about conflict, boundaries, you know, things like that, and they've never done it before, they don't even know what that really should look like, it's very overwhelming. It would be like me saying, okay, you know nothing about how to put a car together, so here you go, like go put this car together, rather than learning just like one aspect of the car and how to do that really well, and then moving on to, okay, now I can change the oil, now I can change a tire, rather than saying, no, just put the whole car back together, I'm going to give you every single piece. So for me, it's so important to, with recovery and healing and getting better and mental health and learning how to be healthy, it's really, it's like these small little things that you just have to master one at a time. I think where people sometimes will get frustrated is because they do want an instant change, and you're dealing with a lifetime of trauma. I mean, you're dealing with a lifetime of stuff that is just with you, and you can't just let it go and, you know, pack up a new suitcase of all new healthy stuff that you can now incorporate into your day-to-day life. It takes work for sure. And it's something that, you know, people just have to be aware of. But I always tell people it's easy work. I think it's easy work because it's little things. Right. And when you can master one little thing, you feel a sense of accomplishment to feel good. It doesn't mean you're gonna be able to stand up to your narcissistic mother tomorrow and just heal from codependency in 6 months. You know, it could take years. But I do think the more you do these little steps, it adds up to real significant change.
You know, I don't think there's a coincidence that we found each other and we decided to do this talk because, you know, despite our differences, we have a lot of similarities. And when you talk about these steps, these stages, it's very similar to my whole self-love recovery treatment program, is that every step in itself is not as difficult as the stages within a step. And if people can just focus on accomplishing one new skill, one new insight, one new change of habits, mm-hmm. neutralizing a bad habit, it excites them, it empowers mm-hmm. them, and enables them to see themselves as, you know, a person who can be what they wanted to be or what they should have been. And that, but that said, I have to also explain why it doesn't work if there's something in the background that is going to offset it. So I want to use a simple analogy of alcoholism. Many people who are addicted to a drug such as alcohol, they find this drug to self-medicate to solve an underlying emotional problem. And it could be sadness, grief, low self-esteem. And that medication helps them to feel better in a world in which they don't feel like they fit or they don't feel good enough. It numbs the pain. So if you go into a treatment facility and they say, okay, we're going to show you step by step how to solve your alcoholism. And let's say that analogously, you and I are treatment providers for alcoholism. And we do a fantastic job, but we don't get to the underlying roots to why that person started to drink. What will happen is we will have made profound impact in that person's life, and they will get out of the treatment, go home, and feel fantastic. But those same problems that led them to wanting something to make them feel better, to detach, to numb out, are going to come back up. And there's going to be this internal struggle between what you've learned and mastered and why you needed to use the drug ahead of time. So I guess what I'm trying to say is the skill development that we both teach our clients has to be countered with some type of mediation, some type of therapeutic coaching interventions that gets to why we needed to use these bad habits, what purpose were these bad habits serving, and dig deeper and then work on that also. And together we have what I call the codependency cure or the solution. But what do you think of what I'm saying?
Funny that you say that, because I remember going to therapy for the first time and sitting and learning and going back. And I always say, I always needed to know the why. I couldn't fix something without knowing the why. I had to answer that question. You know, why is it that I behave in this way? Why is it that I attract this type of a person? Why is it that I have anxiety? You know, why is it that I'm always overthinking? Why is it that I'm obsessed with making everything okay with everyone? OCD, control, you know, all of those types of things. So when I went into therapy, I remember doing it and also doing self-development at the same time. And I didn't realize what I was doing. And it's funny that you gave this example, or you just said what you said, because now looking back for myself, I think a big part of why I feel like it worked was because I was doing both at the same time. I wasn't overwhelmed, you know, like I wasn't going to therapy and doing coaching and buying a program and do it, you know, right. I know that I've had plenty of those clients where they're doing too much and I'm like, one thing at a time, you know, or maybe two things, but don't overwhelm yourself. But I was doing both. And I think if you have to know the whys and you have to go back, because that really is significantly healing towards being able to go forward and learn these skills. Because you're right, these are skills that you're going to learn, but if the trauma is still there and that stuff is still sitting with you, then it's never going to work. It'll work for a short time. You'll learn a couple things, but you'll always resort back to what you've always known and what you've been addicted to, for sure.
Can I say something?
Yes.
So now I want to complicate things further. Reflecting back on my experience as a psychotherapist, I get a lot of clients who tell me about their psychotherapy. And I would say maybe a third to a half of them have had therapy with or work with coaches who help them figure out the whys. And that's extraordinary work. But what about if the why, which is responsible for self-love deficit disorder or codependency, is unconscious? It was disassociated from our memory because of its trauma. SLDD, codependency, is caused by attachment trauma. Now, I'm not going to explain this here, but I have this information on my YouTube channel and other sources. But you know, I have this pyramid model that explains that SLDD or codependency is a symptom, and a lot of people go to therapists and coaches who help them with the symptoms. the very bottom, the very foundation of the disorder is attachment trauma that has been disassociated like much other trauma or PTSD is. Mm-hmm. So if the cause of SLDD, self-love deficit disorder, is unconscious, disassociated, repressed, and a therapist doesn't know how to get to that, then you cannot move a person forward past the disorder. There is a stark difference between getting someone to explain what happened and then working out the whys. But if you can't get to the trauma, then my clients stay stuck. So what I do in my psychotherapy is I have created a technique, a strategy, a treatment program that does many things, including getting to the unconscious element of the whys, bring that forward and integrate it. So then when you and I then work our magic, it integrates, it settles in, and it becomes permanent.
Now, the unconscious stuff, can you just explain a little bit of that? So why does someone, how does someone experience something and that trauma becomes something that's unconscious?
I should say that I have a 6-hour educational video on this topic, and I will give you like a minute worth of an explanation.
The recap, the gist.
Not even a recap, a minute's worth. But trauma, when trauma is beyond a person's capacity to process it, deal with it, work through it, the brain behaves mechanically. It decides it's too much for it, and it puts it into another part of the brain called the amygdala or the limbic system, where the person doesn't remember it. So when we think of PTSD, most people who have PTSD cannot remember or do not want to remember what happened to them because it's just too painful. So that trauma is disassociated from one's memory. It's still in the brain. You can't remember it. It still impacts a person's mental health, their emotions. So when trauma is disassociated, in the olden days, Freud called it repressed, unconscious. It means that the brain just, our mental health at the time was not strong enough to deal with it. So it puts it offline. So when I talk about the trauma that creates SLDD or codependency, it's the trauma that was endured during their a person's formative years from birth to age 7 or 8. And if you are born into a family with a narcissistic parent and a codependent parent, that trauma that SLDs have is tremendously painful, that is so hard to get to, you put it away. And if a therapist doesn't understand it, doesn't know where it is, doesn't know how to get to it, and doesn't know how to bring it forward and integrate it, the skills and the services that we provide, it doesn't stick.
Right, right.
And that's what I'm trying to teach the world, is not only how to understand self-love deficit disorder, codependency, its origins, but to also teach them the skills, the techniques, and how to solve something that you might not even recognize or see.
You know what I love about that is because, I mean, I talk a lot about childhood development and I talk a lot about those, blank slate years in development, 0 to 8, like you were saying, where we're completely susceptible to everything. We're sponges. I mean, we all know this. Most people know this in terms of right. Child development. But I think it's important to understand is what you were saying is the trauma, because, and I think people don't often realize how much you as a child were not able to even deal with half of the things that you heard and saw and felt because you didn't have the skills. You didn't know. But what I love about what you just said is that now as an adult, because let's be frank, we're still going through trauma, 9/11 exactly. Trauma, that was a trauma for all of us. So some people don't go on a plane now because of that. So even learning these skills as an adult to help you with future trauma is really essential. I got mugged in this alley. I got into a car accident, all of those things. Do you think as an adult that, and I know we're kind of going a little all over the place, but I just want to hone this because I think it's a great thing, because as people are learning and going back and learning these skills, you're still going to go through the rest of your life of experiencing things, and how these aspects that you and I teach really help your future life, you know, not just going back and healing that unconscious stuff.
Absolutely. In fact, the second version of the Human Magnet Syndrome, I started the book with a chapter that basically says, stop passing the baton forward. The idea is that if we don't solve our codependency or self-love deficit disorder, it's going to be passed on forward to generation to generation. And to figure that out, we have to take responsibility for the problem. Mm-hmm. And you can't solve a problem if you blame someone for something that you are involved in. And that's why I created this whole metaphor of the dance that, you know, the codependent and the narcissist are partners in a dance. They both come to the dance. They both enjoy the dance. They both choose the partners. One leads and takes control, and one follows, and both feel good in their roles. But I also wanted to say that, and I talk about myself, and I'm not asking you to reflect on yourself, but I also am talking about 99% of my clients. If they survived a relationship with a narcissist and divorced them or got divorced, they're completely wiped out and they're broken and they need our services to heal. But they will make the same choice again. So the question is, why does someone who's been in therapy, say someone who's been in therapy or coaching, who has learned a great deal of information, that has grown, has learned how to set boundaries, has learned about self-esteem, why is the next person that they fall in love with, their next husband, their next wife, next partner, a narcissist? That is beyond conscious awareness. That is this connection that, hey, I'm a dancer and there's only one type of person I like to dance with that feels right. And you and your broken picker is always going to choose the wrong person. So, and I say that to help people understand that how impactful trauma is on our relationship choices. If we were hurt really badly as a child and did not learn about self-love, did not learn about healthy relationships, we are going to repeat these same mistakes over and over again until we find out what happened to us and how skewed or gaslit we became in that process, so that we recognize love in the eyes of a broken, harmful person.
What do you think is one skill within, you know, self-love, when you think of this huge thing, love yourself and everything, what is, or not even just skill, what is one thing that you feel like most people don't do for themselves?
This sounds overly simplistic, is self-love. Now, self-love can be anything that makes you feel good, makes you feel, it's like how would you treat yourself the same way as you would treat your best friend. I think Adam Roa did something on YouTube that really impacted me on that. And so if you can take care of yourself like you would do your child, sleep late, take a day off of work, buy clothes that you always wanted, it's the belief that you deserve it. It's the motivation that you want to give it to yourself. And it's the absence of the negative self-talk, the gaslighting. So to answer your question, the one thing that exemplifies self-love the most is recognizing in any given moment what you want and neutralizing any thought that talks you out of it. And that could be a good cup of coffee or a wonderful person that you just met that you want to spend, you know, the afternoon with.
I always give the analogy to all of my clients is I say, and this doesn't, when I say self, I always call it self-parenting. And so when I say that to them, some people are like, they're 18 or they're 21 or, you know, and they're like, well, I'm not a parent, so I don't know. And okay, I know what I would want from mom and dad, but how do I like turn that, like what I would have needed from them, and how do I turn that around? And I always tell people, imagine that you, and I'm just going to actually close this because the sun's coming through, but imagine you walk out your door, and as I'm trying to find, there we go. You walk out your door and there's a 7-year-old child right there. Mm-hmm. And you are now a parent, and you are going to be stuck with that 7-year-old child. And they'll vary in age a little bit. They'll go from 7 to, this light just continues to follow me. They'll go from 7 to 9 to 10 to 15. But they're going to stay a child, or a young child. And they're attached to your hip, as most children are, to their caregiver. And I said, so now you have to go about your life every single day, a parent to this child. So if you did see a child and you had to take responsibility for that child, and even if the child was lost and couldn't find their mom or dad, what would you say? Are you okay? How do you feel? Did you sleep well last night? What do you need? What would you like for breakfast? Oh, the bully was bothering you in the playground. Let me go take care of that for you. You would know how to stand up to other people. You would know how to take care of yourself. So I always use that analogy, and I say it because all you need to do is just turn that around. Like, that's literally all you're doing. You're just finding out from that child inside that, what do you need? How do you feel? Did you sleep well? You don't like the way this is making you feel, you know, oh, I can sense you're upset right now. What's bothering you? You know, all of those kind of check-ins and doing this throughout the day. To me, I was like, okay, that is, I guess, the outline of self-love and what it means to really love yourself. And then of course, going a little deeper, because we can say these things all day long, but when you're in the mind, for me, the hardest part was detaching.
Right.
Was detaching from the stories, the negative self-talk, low self-esteem, to put up with a partner that was probably unhealthy for me, or not stand up for myself, fear of confrontation, even achieving, you know, what career do I want? Oh, I want to be a painter and I'm a lawyer. Oh, well, you know, just all of that. Being able to detach a little bit to decide, how do I want to handle this situation? What do I really want to believe? I think it, you know, again, these are all little skills, but it takes mastering one thing at a time.
What I'm hearing you say is, at least from, see, it's interesting because you're a coach and I'm a psychotherapist, and we might do similar things, but we might have different words or terms or explanations. Right. So what you're saying, or at least what I'm hearing, which is often not different, we strive for it to be the same, right? Is that we have to identify how gaslighting has impacted our understanding of ourselves and our relationship with ourselves. If you are an SLD, self-love deficient, a codependent, you were born in a very traumatic household where you learned that your worth is based upon your ability to mold yourself into the likable, lovable, appreciable person that the narcissist needs. And if you can figure that out, of all the people in the family, you get the love, and you've become the great pretender. And in this crucible of attachment experience, your mind gets, your thoughts, your self-esteem gets distorted. You start to learn that you are who you are based upon another person's need. And then add on to, if the narcissist is a covert narcissist or a sociopathic traits, then they purposely gaslight you and try to make you into the person that they want, not the person that you are. So now we move forward, and you're just kind of a messed up SLD like I was. And I say messed up, not in a derogatory, judgmental way, where you keep falling in love with narcissists or allow people to hurt you. And someone starts working with your thoughts and your feelings, kind of what you and I are suggesting. But the very core of your self-belief, your self-narrative, is that no one loves you. Every time you do something, you're going to upset someone. So any type of skill acquisition, any type of coaching, any type of psychotherapy strategies are going to fall flat if we don't address the gaslighting and the understanding that the person's concept of themselves is not necessarily theirs. It's what someone else put inside of them. And once we can dive into that gaslighting, help people understand what happened to them and help them understand who they are and develop what I call an authentic self-narrative, then everything that you and I do will stick, because it is built upon a true an undiluted or undistorted version of themselves. So those thoughts and those beliefs that we have of ourselves, we have to first undo the ones that were implanted in us that were meant to satisfy a deceitful, malignant, broken narcissist.
And I think the one thing, in my opinion, you can tell me what you think, the one thing that actually helps that is, I was going to say repetitiveness, but doing it. You know
Absolutely.
What I mean? So therapy once or twice a week, coaching, listening to tapes, buying programs,
yes.
reading the books,
yes.
listening to the podcast, because you're trying to wipe away something that is ingrained. You know, the scar is here, and you're trying to really not only just like heal the scar, but you want the scar to go away and have it actually be something positive and nourishing and healthy. So in order to actually do that, you have to do it consistently, you know,
Absolutely.
And do everything that we're talking about in a consistent basis. That's why I always tell people, I know when I first started my practice, I required a minimum of 3 months to mm-hmm. work with me, because I said, and that's a minimum, because I'm like, if you are trying to heal some deep rooted, this is not going to be a 2 week process.
Yeah.
Or you come see me once a month, whenever you feel like it, when you're really low in the dumps, you have to really be committed to this process of saying, okay, I'm going to fully take responsibility for myself as an adult. I know what I went through in my past. I'm going to really go there and dive into all of that and heal that and feel that. But then I'm also going to work going forward. It has to be this machine that's constantly going back and forth. And you have to really be on that machine constant and working that. Now, any program or any video that I or anyone that I even talk to, I always tell them, I'm still working on myself. This isn't something that's okay, I'm done. You know, it's a constant muscle that I'm working of really learning how to have positive and healthy self-talk, soothe myself, validate myself. Some years are, you know, depending on what life wants to throw at us, sometimes it's easier than others, but I always tell people the more you do it, the easier it does get. And you start, and when you feel better, that's why I always say it's the small steps. Because if you have a win, that gives you the confidence and the encouragement.
Exactly.
Like, I want to keep going and I want to learn more.
I first of all, I was clapping because you are so authentic and genuine. And I so appreciate when I find healers, therapists, coaches who walk the walk and talk the talk. And it's probably what has drawn me to you. So the idea that you not only espouse these great ideas, but you also live them. As much as I've just spent the last 20 minutes or so talking about the underlying issues and the gaslighting, blah, 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 I want to emphasize how important what you are saying is. I have a 10-stage recovery program. And by the way, mine lasts anywhere from 9 months to a year and a half in order to resolve.
We're healing, so this takes time.
Yeah. But what you and I do are equally important, but they're a little mm-hmm. bit different, and that's good. But in those 10 stages are stages that are all about skill acquisition. It's all about practice. It's all about exactly what you're talking about. And it wouldn't surprise me if you and I unknowingly do similar things, is teach people new ideas, new concepts, new ways of thinking, confront them. And that is so important, because how can you break this self-love deficit disorder, this codependency, this predilection to cause yourself pain while making everyone feel happy, if you don't know what to do or how to do it? And people like myself, we did not grow up in a family where our parents taught us basic skills. And I cannot overemphasize how important your program is to the mental health of a recovering self-love deficit disordered individual, or someone with SLD, because we have to relearn ourselves. We have to relearn what is good thinking, what is healthy thinking. We have to relearn the habits of taking care of ourselves. And that is hard, hard stuff. If you have been punished or consequenced or isolated for any time you try to take care of yourself. Not only do you not know what to do, you are scared and nervous to do it. So I am grateful and deeply impressed by your work and your approach to it.
Can I ask you, what do you think is the difference between someone who, like I said, for me, I was in therapy and I was doing coaching, but I hadn't hit enough pain that it really woke me up. I was just dabbling in those areas. You know, let me go to therapy. I feel like something's wrong. You know, let me talk about mom and dad. Let me talk about childhood. Let me talk about what I've been through and how I feel and actually be authentic, you know, a healthy human being to expose everything that's going on inside, right? And let's do coaching and work on self-talk and work on limited beliefs and assumptions that I have and fears and all of those other things. But I didn't really hit the point of like, wow, something needs to change until I hit enough pain, which was that narcissistic relationship. And everyone knows my story on my channel because I tell everyone all the time. But that allowed me to hit enough pain. What do you think is, I don't even know if this is a question or is it just a statement, but I find it intriguing that some people can hit a little bit of pain and it wakes them up to take responsibility, acknowledge, they want to go deep, they want to heal. And there are other people that you see them hitting pain. I think of like addictions and stuff like that for years and years, and they still can't get there.
Okay. It's a great question and it's a very complicated question, and I'm going to try to answer it.
I love asking you these long, complicated questions.
And again, I have like 15 6-hour educational videos I sell at selfloverecovery.com.
And you guys go check out this information because this is real stuff that will literally help you to heal a lot of unconscious stuff, but please go ahead.
And thank you. I'm saying this again, my video called The Hitch Method, Healing the Inner Trauma Child Method, talks about in depth trauma and the pain of that trauma we carry that we don't know. And the problem with so many people who are SLDs, codependents, is they can't get to the source of the pain because it is just too big. It's again, if we look at the trauma model and we think of PTSD, and let's say your friend was in the war and they lost their best friend and they can't remember any of it because it's just too big to remember that. So you won't remember the primary pain, but you'll remember the secondary or the tertiary pain, the ache. And so what self-love deficit disorder, of course, is caused by attachment trauma. That's all disassociated unconscious pain that through my Healing the Inner Trauma Child method, I can connect to it. And it's huge pain and it's very, very complicated to get to. Mm-hmm. But the next level is core shame. Now that is mostly conscious and that's very painful. Core shame is basically feeling fundamentally broken and not good enough. And the next level of understanding SLDD is pathological loneliness. It's this bone aching pain, this existential disease where you just do not feel good anytime unless you're in the company of another person, which is going to be a narcissist. And then and the next level, my pyramid, is the addiction, the compulsion to be with a narcissist. And then, of course, at the top of the pyramid is the problem, codependency or self-love deficit disorder. So with regard to the comment about pain, there's different types of pain. You can have a back problem and have an ache in your side. But that's a superficial pain that's from the muscles around your back. But
good analogy.
You can't get to the pain that is actually right where the spinal cord is and where I had back surgery, so I know this, and the bulging discs are impinging, because that's the deepest pain. So most people go to a chiropractor and get help with the more superficial pain. So this pain that we have, we should embrace it and find a way to solve it, because, and then dig deeper. And you know, I created this approach called Paleon psychotherapy, where I use this metaphor. It's like pretending we're digging for dinosaur bones or trauma fossils, is we have to dig and find one piece at a time and put it together. So to your statement or question, is the pain hurts us, it keeps us stuck, but if we meet a person and work with a person such as you or me or other qualified practitioners, that pain can be a gift because it can lead us to solve. I remember, sorry, it sounds, seems like I'm going off here, but one last statement. I remember my doctors, when I had, before I had spinal fusion surgery, they wanted to give me pain pills. And I said, no, because every time they gave me a pain pill, I felt good. And I started doing stuff. And the pain pill would wear off. I was worse because the pain told me to not move. The pain was my body's reaction to say something is wrong, get off your feet. Mm-hmm. I used a pain pill, I went on my feet and I was worse. The pain teaches us something. And if we are ready mentally, emotionally, personally to solve it by working in your program or my program, that pain, as difficult as it is, will not only lead us to the core cause or the primary pain, but it will help us solve the problems that keep that pain alive.
And that's interesting because that you say that, because when I got divorced and I realized and I reflected back on the relationship and then myself and then my part in the relationship, all the therapy and it all just kind of came together. And that was like that awakening moment that people say, or that point where I had hit that wall where I was like, okay, something has to change now. Cause you know, obviously you have to let go of the victim. You have to let go of the ego. You have to let go of the blame and like all those things and sit in it for a minute. But I love how you talked about shame, the loneliness, the addiction, the codependency. I love those layers because within each is your ability to kind of learn how to heal that and love yourself, right? And exactly. I love how you incorporated that in, because the shame, of course, is at the core. Yes, that's a huge piece of it. The I'm not enough, whatever it is that you want to call it, the loneliness, the addiction, the codependency, because you're right. The codependency can't be healed unless all of those things underneath are good and they're starting to feel better. Let's just talk. I actually, if you don't mind, I would love to go to the shame piece real quick, because I think that that's a huge thing that most people carry around with them, either shame or the I'm not enough, that like core feeling of not being good enough. And obviously we all know childhood, how that kind of gets there. I love your approach to learning how to heal that and really not be a person that has shame. For me, I've always told everyone, it's something that, you know, I do myself. It's something that has helped me, is just the consistency. You're not going to heal shame in a day, that's for sure. Right. But the more consistent you are with taking care of yourself, like I said, that child, and what do I think? What do I feel? I deserve this. And really those little moments of getting out of your comfort zone, something as simple. And I hear clients say this all the time. I say, you know, go for this week or 2 days and just focus on how do you feel and what do you need? Just really focus on that area right there. And they'll say, it felt actually very uncomfortable. I didn't know what I needed. I don't know. Like, I don't know how I feel. I get that a lot. I don't know what I feel. I don't know what I need. I think really practicing these skills every day, it sets the foundation to really start to feel better and to heal that stuff.
And when people such as yourself work with others to resolve the shame, it takes those interventions that you talked about. It takes getting people out of their comfort zone, because you would think logically that if someone's filled with shame and self-doubt, and that if you lead them to things that would make them feel better, that they would do it and enjoy it. But remember this, shame requires the shame that is responsible for self-love deficit disorder, codependency. It requires the shame in order to feel connected to a purpose. Now, it might sound paradoxical, but think of this. All of the people who you work with, or I've worked with, who keep going into these horrible, harmful relationship with narcissists, They don't want someone to hurt them. They don't want someone to treat them like crap. They don't want to be humiliated and degraded and gaslit. They just want someone to love them. And the very first moment after what I call the soulmate fog lifts, and the cellmate become, excuse me, the soulmate becomes the cellmate, and there's something that goes wrong. The first thing that happens with the SLD is they think, what did I do wrong? They make an excuse for that person because of their terror of being alone and believing that if this doesn't work, no one else will love them. And so that shame keeps the shame alive. It's like the shame exists because it feeds itself. Mm-hmm. And the fear of loneliness. And that's why I created the concept SLDD or codependency addiction, where you will seek the drug, alcohol, gambling, sex, whatever a drug is. Well, SLDD, your drug is to be in a relationship because the relationship takes away the loneliness, the pathological loneliness, the gut-wrenching, searing loneliness. And underneath the loneliness is this shame. See, shame is feeling fundamentally broken, that if you're not in this relationship, that means you're unlovable and you'll never find someone. So we have to understand the cycle, that shame requires more shame in order to justify being in a relationship with a narcissist. And to break that cycle is challenging. Mm-hmm. But when you do things that are part of your program or my program, and we teach people how to take care of themselves, how to nurture themselves, how to forgive themselves, we one step at a time are like dismantling that shame and giving the person a reason to believe something different, that they actually are good, they are worthwhile. And sometimes it just takes practice and pushing, and pushing in a good way.
Well, and you know, and this is why I started my channel, was because I loved the aspect of free therapy, free coaching, you know, like listening to mm-hmm. the podcast, watching the videos, and then going the next step further when you're ready to invest in the programs and buy the books and like all of those types of things. Because it helps the reiteration of the same stuff over and over again. But I know for me, when I talk to a client and I hear the unworthiness, the low self-esteem, the self-doubt, the fears, you know, all of those things, the addiction to want to go back to that relationship, you know, and again, this is why it's so important to be consistent with whatever it is that you're doing, is just that small recognition of, oh, I'm in the program. I'm in the habit. I'm in the addiction. I want to go back. Why do I want to go back? It's like these two sides of people are constantly fighting with each other, from that like emotional wounded place to that logical adult that knows. It's like with eating, excuse me, as my dog decided to just shake. It's like those addictions to even eating. It's like, I know I shouldn't be eating that because I just indulged yesterday, but I'm going to do it anyways. So it's just that brief moment of kind of recognition to say, okay, wait, let me be mindful to the old program, the tape, what I've always known, what I've always done, and try something different in this tiny moment that creates, you know, the momentum to keep going and actually keep changing and healing and feeling better.
Absolutely. You know, every move out of self-love deficiency, every move out of codependency, every successive accomplishment, it builds. Mm-hmm. It builds, just like when someone is trying to destruct us and hurt us and abuse us. They, one stone at a time, one layer at a time, it keeps us down. Mm-hmm. And so we need our services. But I also want to add is, as you and I are doing what we're talking about, we also have to be conscious. And this is where I think psychotherapy might be a little bit different. I don't know that much about coaching, so you can correct me if I'm wrong. Mm-hmm. But is that what I think about, as much as what you and I are talking about, is building a new trajectory, overcoming the old obstacles by the satisfaction and the self-esteem created by accomplishment and success, is to understand that an SLD is not just an SLD because of themselves. They are in a relationship with someone who, like a vampire, feeds off their life source. They need what the SLD self-esteem. They need the SLD to feel broken. They need the SLD to be filled with shame, because without that, the SLD would leave them. And so we have to be cognizant that as we are leading our clients forward in skill acquisition and healing, that we also understand the forces in the background that are going to try to either neutralize our efforts or create danger for our clients, which is why I do some of my videos and warn, what's at stake in getting healthy. And I think the combination creates, and that's why you're doing so well, and I try to do well, is that we are giving people, maybe for the first time, opportunities to be happy just because of they are who they are, and learn how to create opportunities to move that forward.
And I think, I love what you said. It was beautifully said, actually. But I think, I always tell people, even when someone has worked with me and we're at that last session and we're done, and I always say, come back for pick-me-up, because you've learned the skills. I gave you the tools, and now you're using them in your day-to-day life. But you're right, because you don't know what's coming in a person and experience anything that's going to kind of re-trigger that trauma or bring something up that maybe you need to go a little bit further with, and work on a little bit more, or heal a little bit more.
Hold on. So you're talking about one thing that we actually spent a great amount of this discussion talking about the triggering, the emotions, the past trauma. What I'm saying, in addition to that, is understanding that there is a person in the background who has a great deal to lose by the SLD or the codependence progress, and that they are very focused and watchful, if that's a word. Is it a word?
Can use that. That's fine. We're a relaxed channel.
they are vigilant in what is happening. They're going to Stephanie Lynn's coaching, and how can they neutralize that? How can they sow the seeds of doubt? How can they sabotage that? And if the person is on the sociopathic or covert narcissistic side, the SLD, the victim, won't even know it. And that's the part that sometimes is insidiously challenging, is to understand, as we are helping our clients, to help them or teach them, develop awareness or skill acquisition on understanding the forces around them that need them to be broken. Because that skill set, that knowledge in itself, allows them to absorb what you have to teach them. Because the greatest threat to their narcissistic partner is your mental health.
Right, exactly. I always tell people, look at a lot of aspects of your life as these little goals that you set for yourself. So if you say, okay, I want a healthy relationship, and I've never had one, I don't even know what does that even mean? Because a lot of people struggle with that, of knowing what a healthy dynamic actually should look like. I always tell people, and we've heard this phrase before, you can't love someone until you love yourself. The more you love yourself, you teach people how you want to be treated, et cetera, et cetera. But why is that so true and so important? If you think about it, how I'm going to treat myself and what I'm going to give myself, a partner is a partner. We're supposed to be two living life together, right? But I'm still me and you're still you. And I may not always be able to do everything for myself because I'm not superwoman. So I need friends, I need support, I need family, I need a partner that is loving and kind and empathetic and all of those things to help me. But I should always be able to do this by myself in terms of just taking care of myself, right? And when I can't and I need support, I reach out to the therapist and the coaches and the family and the friends, et cetera. So what I can do for myself, someone should be able to, I always say, the more you rise, someone's either going to rise with you or they're just going to fall. Right. And for someone who is narcissistic, they're always going to fall. And not only are they going to fall off, but they're going to want to pull you. And the more you become healthy and gain your power, you actually probably won't even be attractive to someone like that, because it's not working. They're not going to be able to get what they want or need from you because you're not willing to give it anymore. And that's why the self-love and learning how to love yourself and what you teach and what I teach is so, so important, because it allows you to only have people in your life that should be in your life that are healthy because you're healthy. And so you're always, and I always, even with codependency, when people say, well, I'm not narcissistic, so how could I attract someone that's on my level? And I'm like, well, you're the giver and they're the taker, like you say with the dance. And so that's why it works so well. Right. Whereas if I'm a giver to me first, and then when I'm good, I will give to you, then that relationship will never work, because that's not what they want in a partner.
Right. Yeah. And breaking those habits take commitment. They take perseverance, courage to start working with you or to me. But we should never underestimate the amount of courage that it takes to work on your self-love deficiency, self-love deficit disorder, your codependency, because the forces behind the scenes are deeply, are deeply impacted by any progress. And the narcissists are terrified of it. In fact, I just did this video, and every so often I'll do this video that just kind of skyrockets. And this video, I think in like 2 weeks, has been viewed 100,000 times. And that's pretty quick for my videos. And I explain why narcissists try to destroy a person that leaves them. And I talk about their shame, their loneliness that is so deep, their idea that they cannot be by themselves, that they will do almost anything, including destroying another person, to keep them from feeling the loneliness and the shame of being alone. And when you understand that, you could understand why breaking this SLDD codependency problem is so complicated, because you're not only working against your internal forces that go back to your childhood, your thought, the processes which are thinking and emotions, which we talked about also, but you got a person in the background that will do about anything in order to sabotage your mental health. And that's why people need to see a person like you. Mm-hmm. They need to see a person like me, where they can understand the complexities of the problem and just reverse the trend of self-love deficiency to self-love abundance.
Well, and this is why, you know, you hear everywhere, go no contact. This is where people say, you know, just try your best to not be around a person that is sucking the life out of you in that way, so you can really work on yourself. I mean, I was fortunate that my relationship ended with him leaving me and wanted nothing to do with me. And I always tell people, I am beyond thankful that you found someone else, because I see where it can be tough to do that dance and to go back and forth, especially as you're older and marriage and kids and families and all those things. So just to touch on that point, because I know there's a lot of people out there watching this. I know I've coached clients that struggle with this as well, is they're working on themselves and they still have this relationship with this person pulling them. And it's this continuous struggle for them. They feel like they're getting stronger. And then I think back to clients that I've worked with where just that distance allow them really start feeling a lot better.
You can, because SLDD is an addiction, and I have tons of information, both in my full-length videos and YouTube videos. So if someone was an alcoholic and say whiskey was their drink of choice, and they drank a lot, you can't go to a bar and just have one beer or two beers and say you're getting better. You cannot solve SLDD and be in a relationship with a pathological narcissist. My last video that I recorded last week, I forgot the title, but basically says getting better kills relationships. You cannot survive. A relationship with a pathological narcissist cannot survive if you decide to pursue self-love abundance. Because not only will the narcissist do everything they can to sabotage you, but there won't be anything in there that you will see as loving and attractive, and you will see life as it is. And that pretty much is the game changer.
And that goes for, and just anyone watching, that goes for friends and family,
yes,
et cetera. I always tell people, you start this work, you're going to go through a lonely phase. And people will often tell me, you know, I feel like I've lost a lot of my connections and families, and I don't want to talk to this person anymore. And you do, I did the same as well. For me, I definitely went through a period of not loneliness necessarily, but just a period of a little isolation. You know, there were a lot of relationships that kind of went away. And I always tell people, would you rather have that brief moment of going through that to then have a lifetime of always bringing the good in? Right. You know, and you free up that space to actually have that great relationship, whether it's a friend or whatever.
And what I add, and I call this my Surgeon General warning, and of course, you know, a pack of cigarettes is if you smoke, you'll get emphysema and everything else. Well, my Surgeon General warning is that you are going to lose between 75 and 85% of the relationships with people that you thought loved you or who you thought you loved them. And it sounds like a lot, but you know, people need to be prepared for it. Last thing I want to do is tell someone after 6 months of therapy what's going to happen, and then they say, no, I can't do that. I say that ahead of time. And of course, I also tell them that when this happens, they will be happier and have better friends than they ever did. Mm-hmm. Ever. But the point is there's no way to move forward and break the spell of self-love deficit disorder without letting go of what you thought were friends and loved ones, or them not having any interest in you. And if people are warned, they get a chance to make a decision, and then they're not victimized. Well,
all right, sir.
We could have talked another hour.
I know. My little guy's coming home any minute anyway, so I'm glad it was a good time to kind of wrap it up. Okay, guys. Well, listen, we are going to wrap it up here. You guys, if you are interested in any of Ross's information services products, I'm going to always link everything, including his bio. Please go check it out. And his channel will also be linked down below. So go watch all of his videos. Like I always say, feed your mind every single day. And I will see you next week.
So that about wraps it up. Thanks guys so much for all of your support. I hope you enjoyed this week's episode, and I will see you next week. Thank you.